Random House Audio presents The Death Cure by James Dashner. Read for you by Mark Deakins. Chapter 1. It was the smell that began to drive Thomas slightly mad. Not being alone for over 3 weeks, not the white walls, ceiling, and floor, not the lack of windows or the fact that they never turned off the lights, none of that. They'd taken his watch. They fed him the exact same meal 3 times a day. Slab of ham, mashed potatoes, raw carrots, slice of bread, water. Never spoke to him. Never allowed anyone else in the room. No books, no movies, no games. Complete isolation. For over 3 weeks now, though he'd begun to doubt his tracking of time, which was based purely on instinct. He tried to best guess when night had fallen, made sure he only slept what felt like normal hours. The meals helped, though they didn't seem to come regularly, as if he was meant to feel disoriented. Alone. In a padded room devoid of color, the only exceptions a small, almost hidden stainless steel toilet in the corner and an old wooden desk that Thomas had no use for. Alone, in an unbearable silence, with unlimited time to think about the disease rooted inside him. The flare, that silent, creeping virus that slowly took away everything that made a person human. None of this drove him crazy. But he stank, and for some reason, that set his nerves on a sharp wire, cutting into the solid block of his sanity. They didn't let him shower or bathe, hadn't provided him with a change of clothes since he'd arrived, or anything to clean his body with. A simple rag would have helped. He could dip it in the water they gave him to drink and clean his face at least. But he had nothing, only the dirty clothes he'd been wearing when they locked him away. Not even bedding. He slept all curled up, his butt wedged in the corner of the room, arms folded, trying to hug some warmth into himself, often shivering. He didn't know why the stench of his own body was the thing that scared him the most. Perhaps that in itself was a sign that he'd lost it. But for some reason, his deteriorating hygiene pushed against his mind, causing horrific thoughts. Like he was rotting, decomposing, his insides turning as rancid as his outside felt. That was what worried him, as irrational as it seemed. He had plenty of food and just enough water to quench his thirst. He got plenty of rest, and he exercised as best he could in the small room, often running in place for hours. Logic told him that being filthy had nothing to do with the strength of your heart or the functioning of your lungs. All the same, his mind was beginning to believe that his unceasing stench represented death rushing in, about to swallow him whole. Those dark thoughts, in turn, were starting to make him wonder if Teresa hadn't been lying after all that last time they'd spoken, when she'd said it was too late for Thomas, and insisted that he'd succumbed to the flare rapidly, had become crazy and violent. That he'd already lost his sanity before coming to this awful place. Even Brenda had warned him that things were about to get bad. Maybe they'd both been right. And underneath all that was the worry for his friends. What had happened to them? Where were they? What was the flare doing to their minds? After everything they'd been subjected to, was this how it was all going to end? The rage crept in, like a shivering rat looking for a spot of warmth, a crumb of food. And with every passing day came an increasing anger so intense that Thomas sometimes caught himself shaking uncontrollably before he reeled the fury back in and pocketed it. He didn't want it to go away for good. He only wanted to store it and let it build. Wait for the right time, the right place, to unleash it. Wicked had done all this to him. Wicked had taken his life and those of his friends and were using them for whatever purpose they deemed necessary. No matter the consequences. And for that, they would pay. Thomas swore this to himself 1,000 times a day. All these things went through his mind as he sat back against the wall, facing the door, and the ugly wooden desk in front of it, in what he guessed was the late morning of his 22nd day as a captive in the White Room. He always did this, after eating breakfast, after exercising. hoping against hope that the door would open, actually open, all the way, the whole door, not just the little slot on the bottom through which they slid his meals. He had already tried countless times to get the door open himself, and the desk drawers were empty, nothing there but the smell of mildew and cedar. He looked every morning just in case something might have magically appeared while he slept. Those things happen sometimes when you were dealing with wicked. And so he sat, staring at the door, waiting. White walls and silence. The smell of his own body. Left to think about his friends. Min-ho, Newt, Frypan, the other few gladers still alive. Brenda and Jorge, who'd vanished from sight after their rescue on the giant berg. Harriet and Sonia, and other girls from Group B, Aris. About Brenda and her warning to him after he'd woken up in the white room the first time. How had she spoken in his mind? Was she on his side or not? But most of all, he thought about Teresa. He couldn't get her out of his head, even though he hated her a little more with every passing moment. Her last words to him had been, "Wicked is good." And right or wrong, to Thomas, she'd come to represent all the terrible things that had happened. Every time he thought of her, rage boiled inside him. Maybe all that anger was the last string tethering him to sanity as he waited. Eat. Sleep. Exercise. Thirst for revenge. That was what he did for 3 more days. Alone. On the 26th day, the door opened. Chapter 2. Thomas had imagined it happening countless times. What he would do, what he would say, how he'd rush forward and tackle anyone who came in, make a run for it, flee, escape. But those thoughts were almost for amusement more than anything. He knew that Wicked wouldn't let something like that happen. No, he'd need to plan out every detail before he made his move. When it did happen, when that door popped open with a slight puffing sound and began to swing wide, Thomas was surprised at his own reaction. He did nothing. Something told him an invisible barrier had appeared between him and the desk, like back in the dorms after the maze. The time for action hadn't arrived. Not yet. He felt only the slightest hint of surprise when the rat man walked in, the guy who'd told the gladers about the last trial they'd been forced on through the scorch. Same long nose, same weasel-like eyes. That greasy hair, combed over an obvious bald spot that took up half his head. Same ridiculous white suit. He looked paler than the last time Thomas had seen him, though, and he was holding a thick folder filled with dozens of crinkled and messily stacked papers in the crook of one elbow, and dragging a straight-backed chair.
"Good morning, Thomas," he said with a stiff nod.
Without waiting for a response, he pulled the door shut, set the chair behind the desk, and took a seat. He placed the folder in front of him, opened it, and started flipping through the pages. When he found what he'd been looking for, he stopped and rested his hands on top. Then he flashed a pathetic grin, his eyes settling on Thomas. When Thomas finally spoke, he realized that he hadn't done so in weeks, and his voice came out like a croak.
"It'll only be a good morning if you let me out."
Not even a flicker of change passed over the man's expression.
"Yes, yes, I know. No need to worry. You're going to be hearing plenty of positive news today. Trust me."
Thomas thought about that, ashamed that he let it lift his hopes, even for a second. He should know better by now.
"Positive news? Didn't you choose us because you thought we were intelligent?"
Ratman remained silent for several seconds before he responded.
"Intelligent, yes. Among more important reasons."
He paused and studied Thomas before continuing.
"Do you think we enjoy all this? You think we enjoy watching you suffer? It's all been for a purpose, and very soon it will make sense to you."
The intensity of his voice had built until he'd practically shouted that last word, his face now red.
"Whoa,"
Thomas said, feeling bolder by the minute.
"Slim it nice and calm there, old fella. You look 3 steps away from a heart attack." It felt good to let such words flow out of him. The man stood from his chair and leaned forward on the desk. The veins in his neck bulged in taut cords. He slowly sat back down, took several deep breaths.
You would think that almost 4 weeks in this white box might humble a boy. But you seem more arrogant than ever.
So are you going to tell me that I'm not crazy then? Don't have the flair? Never did? Thomas couldn't help himself. The anger was rising in him until he felt like he was going to explode. But he forced a calmness into his voice. That's what kept me sane through all this. Deep down, I know you lied to Teresa, but this is just another one of your tests. So where do I go next? Gonna send me to the Shuck Moon? Make me swim across the ocean in my undies? He smiled for effect.
The rat man had been staring at Thomas with blank eyes throughout his rant.
Are you finished?
No, I'm not finished. He'd been waiting for an opportunity to speak for days and days, but now that it had finally come, his mind went empty. He'd forgotten all the scenarios he'd played out in his mind.
I want you to tell me everything, now.
Oh, Thomas.
The rat man said it quietly, as if delivering sad news to a small child.
We didn't lie to you. You do have the flair.
Thomas was taken aback. A chill cut through the heat of his rage. Was Ratman lying even now, he wondered. But he shrugged, as if the news were something he'd suspected all along.
Well, I haven't started going crazy yet.
At a certain point, after all that time crossing the Scorch, being with Brenda, surrounded by cranks, he'd come to terms with the fact that he'd catch the virus eventually. But he told himself that for now he was still okay, still sane. And that was all that mattered at the moment. Ratman sighed.
You don't understand. You don't understand what I came in here to tell you.
Why would I believe a word that comes out of your mouth? How could you possibly expect me to? Thomas realized that he'd stood up, though he had no memory of doing so. His chest lurched with heavy breaths. He had to get control of himself. Ratman's stare was cold, his eyes black pits. Regardless of whether this man was lying to him, Thomas knew he was going to have to hear him out if he ever wanted to leave this white room. He forced his breathing to slow. He waited. After several seconds of silence, his visitor continued.
I know we've lied to you, often. We've done some awful things to you and your friends. But it was all part of a plan that you not only agreed to, but helped set in place. We've had to take it all a little farther than we'd hoped in the beginning. There's no doubt about that. However, everything has stayed true to the spirit of what the creators envisioned. What you envisioned in their place after they were purged.
Thomas slowly shook his head. He knew he'd been involved with these people once, somehow, but the concept of putting anyone through what he'd gone through was incomprehensible.
You didn't answer me. How can you possibly expect me to believe anything you say?
He recalled more than he let on, of course. Though the window to his past was caked with grime, revealing little more than splotchy glimpses, he knew he'd worked with Wicked. He knew Teresa had, too, and that they'd helped create the maze. There'd been other flashes of memory.
Because, Thomas, there's no value in keeping you in the dark, Ratman said. Not anymore.
Thomas felt a sudden weariness, as if all the strength had seeped out of him, leaving him with nothing. He sank to the floor with a heavy sigh. He shook his head.
I don't even know what that means.
What was the point of even having a conversation when words couldn't be trusted? Ratman kept talking, but his tone changed. It became less detached and clinical, and more professorial.
You were obviously well aware that we have a horrible disease eating the minds of humans worldwide. Everything we've done up till now has been calculated for one purpose and one purpose only, to analyze your brain patterns and build a blueprint from them. The goal is to use this blueprint to develop a cure for the flare. The lives lost, the pain and suffering, you knew the stakes when this began. We all did. It was all done to ensure the survival of the human race. and we're very close. Very, very close.
Memories had come back to Thomas on several occasions. The changing, the dreams he'd had since, fleeting glimpses here and there, like quick lightning strikes in his mind. And right now, listening to the white-suited man talk, it felt as if he were standing on a cliff, and all the answers were just about to float up from the depths for him to see in their entirety. The urge to grasp those answers was almost too strong to keep at bay. But he was still wary. He knew he'd been a part of it all, had helped design the maze, had taken over after the original creators died and kept the program going with new recruits.
"I remember enough to be ashamed of myself," he admitted. "But living through this kind of abuse is a lot different than planning it. It's just not right."
Ratman scratched his nose, shifted in his seat. Something Thomas said had gotten to him.
"We'll see what you think at the end of today, Thomas. We shall see. But let me ask you this. Are you telling me that the lives of a few aren't worth losing to save countless more?"
Again the man spoke with passion, leaning forward.
"It's a very old axiom, but do you believe the end can justify the means? When there's no choice left?"
Thomas only stared. It was a question that had no good response. The rat man might have smiled, but it looked more like he was sneering.
"Just remember that at one time you believed it did, Thomas."
He started to collect his papers as if to go, but didn't move.
"I'm here to tell you that everything is set and our data is almost complete. We're on the cusp of something great. Once we have the blueprint, you can go boo-hoo with your friends all you want about how unfair we've been."
Thomas wanted to cut the man with harsh words, but he held back.
"How does torturing us lead to this blueprint you're talking about?
What could sending a bunch of unwilling teenagers to terrible places, watching some of them die, what could that possibly have to do with finding a cure for some disease?"
"It has everything in the world to do with it."
Ratman sighed heavily.
"Boy, soon you'll remember everything, and I have a feeling you're going to regret a lot. In the meantime, there's something you need to know. It might even bring you back to your senses."
"And what's that?" Thomas really had no idea what the man would say. His visitor stood up, smoothed the wrinkles out of his pants, and adjusted his coat. Then he clasped his hands behind his back.
"The flare virus lives in every part of your body. Yet it has no effect on you, nor will it ever. You're a member of an extremely rare group of people. You're immune to the flare."
Thomas swallowed, speechless.
"On the outside, in the streets, they call people like you munis,"
Ratman continued.
"And they really, really hate you."
Chapter 3. Thomas couldn't find any words. Despite all the lies he'd been told, he knew that what he'd just heard was the truth. When placed alongside his recent experiences, it just made too much sense. He, and probably the other gladers and everyone in Group B, was immune to the flare, which was why they'd been chosen for the trials. Everything done to them, every cruel trick played, every deceit, every monster placed in their paths, it had all been part of an elaborate experiment, and somehow it was leading Wicked to a cure. It all fit together. And more, this revelation pricked his memories. It felt familiar.
"I can see that you believe me," Ratman finally said, breaking the long silence. "Once we discovered there were people like you, with the virus rooted inside, yet showing no symptoms, we sought out the best and the brightest among you. This is how Wicked was born. Of course, some in your trial group are not immune, and were chosen as control subjects. When running an experiment, you need a control group, Thomas. It keeps all the data in context."
That last part made Thomas's heart sink.
"Who isn't?"
The question wouldn't come out. He was too scared to hear the answer.
"Who isn't immune?"
Ratman asked, eyebrows raised.
"Oh, I think they should find out before you, don't you? But first things first. You smell like a week-old corpse. Let's get you to the showers and find some fresh clothes.
With that, he picked up his file and turned to the door. He was just about to step out when Thomas's mind focused.
Wait!
He shouted. His visitor looked back at him.
Yes?
Back in the Scorch, why did you lie that there'd be a cure at the safe haven? Ratman shrugged.
I don't think it was a lie at all. By completing the trials, by arriving at the safe haven, you helped us collect more data. And because of that, there will be a cure. Eventually. For everyone.
And why are you telling me all this? Why now? Why did you stick me in here for 4 weeks? Thomas motioned around the room, at the padded ceiling and walls, at the pathetic toilet in the corner. His sparse memories weren't solid enough to make any sense of the bizarre things that had been done to him. Why did you lie to Teresa about me being crazy and violent and keep me in here all this time? What could possibly be the point?
Variables, Ratman answered. Everything we've done to you has been carefully calculated by our psychs and doctors, done to stimulate responses in the kill zone where the flare does its damage, to study the patterns of different emotions and reactions and thoughts. See how they work within the confines of the virus that's inside you. We've been trying to understand why in you there's no debilitating effect. It's all about the kill zone patterns, Thomas. Mapping your cognitive and physiological responses to build a blueprint for the potential cure. It's about the cure.
What is the kill zone? Thomas asked, trying to remember but drawing a blank. Just tell me that and I'll go with you.
Why, Thomas, the man replied. I'm surprised being stung by the griever didn't make you recall at least that much. The kill zone is your brain. It's where the virus settles and takes hold. The more infected the kill zone, the more paranoid and violent the behavior of the infected. Wicked is using your brain, and those of a few others, to help us fix the problem. And if you recall, our organization states its purpose right in its name. World in Catastrophe Kill Zone Experiment Department.
Ratman looked pleased with himself, almost happy.
Now, come on, let's get you cleaned up. And just so you know, we're being watched. Try anything and there'll be consequences.
Thomas sat, attempting to process everything he'd just heard. Again, everything rang true, made sense, fit in with the memories that had come back to him in recent weeks. And yet his distrust of Ratman and Wicked still sprinkled it all with doubt. He finally stood, letting his mind work through the new revelations, hoping they'd sort themselves into nice little stacks for later analysis. Without another word, he walked across the room and followed the Ratman through the door, leaving his white-walled cell behind. Nothing stood out about the building in which he found himself. A long hallway, a tiled floor, beige walls with framed pictures of nature, waves crashing on a beach, a hummingbird hovering beside a red flower, rain and mist clouding a forest. Fluorescent lights buzzed overhead. Ratman led him through several turns and finally stopped at a door. He opened it and gestured for Thomas to go in. It was a large bathroom lined with lockers and showers, and one of the lockers was open to show fresh clothes and a pair of shoes, even a watch.
You have about 30 minutes, Ratman said. When you're done, just sit tight. I'll come back for you. Then you'll be reunited with your friends.
For some reason, at the word friends, Teresa popped into Thomas's mind. He tried calling out to her again with his thoughts, but there was still nothing. Despite his ever-growing disdain for her, the emptiness of her being gone still floated like an unbreakable bubble within him. She was a link to his past and, he knew, without any doubt, had once been his best friend. It was one of the only things in his world that he was sure of, and he had a hard time letting go of that completely. Ratman nodded.
See you in a half hour, he said.
Then he pulled the door open and closed it behind him, leaving Thomas alone once more. Thomas still didn't have a plan other than finding his friends, but at least he was one step closer to that. And even though he had no idea what to expect, at least he was out of that room. Finally. For now, a hot shower. A chance to scrub himself clean. Nothing had ever sounded so good. Letting his cares slip away for the moment, Thomas took off his nasty clothes and got to work making himself human again. Chapter 4 T-shirt and jeans. Running shoes, just like the ones he'd worn in the maze. Fresh, soft socks. After washing himself from top to bottom at least 5 times, he felt reborn. He couldn't help but think that from here on things would improve. That he was going to take control of his own life now. If only the mirror hadn't reminded him of his tattoo, the one given to him before the scorch. It was a permanent symbol of what he'd been through, and he wished he could forget it all. He stood outside the door to the bathroom, leaning against the wall, arms folded, waiting. He wondered if the rat man would come back, or had he left Thomas to wander the place, begin yet another trial. He'd barely begun the line of thinking before he heard footsteps, then saw the Weasley man's white form turn the corner.
"Well, aren't you looking spiffy?"
the rat man commented, the edges of his mouth crawling up his cheeks in an uncomfortable-looking smile. Thomas's mind raced with 100 sarcastic answers, but he knew he had to play it straight. All that mattered at the moment was gathering as much information as he could, and then finding his friends.
"I feel fine, actually. So, thanks."
He plastered a casual smile on his own face. "When do I get to see the other gladers?"
"Right now."
Ratman was all business again. He nodded back toward the way he'd come and gestured for Thomas to follow him.
"All of you went through different types of tests for phase 3 of the trials. We'd hoped to have the kill zone patterns mapped out by the end of the second phase, but we had to improvise in order to push further. Like I said, though, we're very close. You'll all be full partners in the study now, helping us fine-tune and dig deeper until we solve this puzzle."
Thomas squinted. He guessed his phase 3 had been the White Room, but what about the others? As much as he'd hated his trial, he could only imagine how much worse Wicked could have made it. He almost hoped he never found out what they had devised for his friends. Finally, Ratman arrived at a door. He opened it without hesitating and stepped through. They entered a small auditorium, and relief washed over Thomas. Sitting scattered among a dozen or so rows of seats were his friends, safe and healthy-looking. The gladers and girls of Group B. Minho, Frypan, Newt, Aris, Sonya, Harriet. Everyone seemed happy, talking, smiling, and laughing, though maybe they were faking to some extent. Thomas assumed they'd been told things were almost over, but he doubted anyone believed it. He certainly didn't. Not yet. He looked around the room for Jorge and Brenda. He really wanted to see Brenda. He'd been anxious about her ever since she'd vanished after the Berg picked them up, worried that Wicked had sent her and Jorge back to the Scorch like they'd threatened to, but there was no sign of either one. Before he could ask Ratman about them, however, a voice broke through the din, and Thomas couldn't stop a smile from spreading across his face.
"Well, I've been shucked and gone to heaven. It's Thomas," Minho called out.
His announcement was followed by hoots and cheers and catcalls, a swell of relief mixed with the worry clawing in Thomas's stomach, and he continued to search the faces in the room. Too overcome to speak, he just kept grinning until his eyes found Teresa. She'd stood up, turned from her chair on the end of the row to face him. Black hair, clean and brushed and shiny, draped over her shoulders and framed her pale face. Her red lips parted into a huge smile, lighting up her features, making her blue eyes glow. Thomas almost went to her but stopped himself, his mind clouded with vivid memories of what she'd done to him, of what she'd said about Wicked being good, even after everything that had happened. "Can you hear me?" he called out with his mind, just to see if their ability had come back. But she didn't respond, and he still didn't feel her presence inside him. They just stood there, staring at each other, eyes locked for what seemed like a minute, but could only have been a few seconds. And then Minho and Newt were by his side, slapping him on the back, shaking his hand, pulling him into the room.
"Well, at least you didn't bloody roll over and die, Tommy," Newt said, squeezing his hand tightly.
His tone sounded grumpier than usual, especially considering they hadn't seen each other in weeks, but he was in one piece, which was something to be thankful for. Min-ho had a smirk on his face, but a hard glint in his eyes showed that he'd been through an awful time, that he wasn't quite himself yet, just trying his hardest to act like it.
The mighty gladers back together again. Good to see you alive, shuckface. I've imagined you dead in about 100 different ways. I bet you cried every night, missing me.
Yeah, Thomas muttered, thrilled to see everybody but still struggling to find words. He broke away from the reunion and made his way to Teresa. He had an overwhelming urge to face her and come to some kind of peace until he could decide what to do.
Hey.
Hey, she replied. You okay?
Thomas nodded.
I guess. Kind of a rough few weeks.
He stopped himself. He'd almost asked if she'd been able to hear him trying to reach out to her with his mind, but he didn't want to give her the satisfaction of knowing he'd done it.
I tried, Tom, every day. I tried to talk to you. They cut us off, but I think it's all been worth it.
She reached out and took his hand, which set off a chorus of mocking jabs from the gladers. Thomas quickly pulled his hand from her grasp, felt his face flush red. For some reason, her words had made him suddenly angry, but the others mistook his action for mere embarrassment.
Aw, Min-ho said. That's almost as sweet as the time she slammed the end of a spear into your shuck face. True love indeed.
This from Fry Pan, followed by his deep bellow of a laugh.
I'd hate to see what happens when these two have their first real fight.
Thomas didn't care what they thought, but he was determined to show Teresa that she couldn't get away with everything she'd done to him. Whatever trust they'd shared before the trials, whatever relationship they'd had, meant nothing now. He might find a sort of peace with her, but he resolved right then and there that he would only trust Min-ho and Newt, no one else. He was just about to respond when Ratman came marching down the aisle clapping his hands.
Everybody take a seat. We've got a few things to cover before we remove the swipe.
He'd said it so casually, Thomas almost didn't catch it. The words registered, "Remove the swipe," and he froze. The room stilled, and the rat man stepped up onto the stage at the front of the room and approached the lectern. He gripped the edges and repeated the same forced smile from earlier, then spoke.
That's right, ladies and gents. You're about to get all your memories back. Every last one of them.
Chapter 5. Thomas was stunned. Mind spinning, he went to sit by Min-ho. After struggling for so long to remember his life, his family, and childhood, even what he'd done the day before he woke up in the maze, the idea of having it all back was almost too much to comprehend. But as it sank in, he realized that something had shifted. Remembering everything didn't sound good anymore. And his gut confirmed what he'd been feeling since the rat man had said it was all over. It just seemed too easy. Ratman cleared his throat.
As you were informed in your one-on-ones, the trials, as you've known them, are over. Once your memories are restored, I think you'll believe me and we can move on. You've all been briefed on the flare and the reasons for the trials. We are extremely close to completing our blueprint of the kill zone. The things we need to further refine what we have, we'll be better served by your full cooperation and unaltered minds. So, congratulations.
I ought to come up there and break your shuck nose,
Min-ho said. His voice was terrifyingly calm, considering the threat in his words.
I'm sick of you acting like everything is peachy, like more than half of our friends didn't die.
I'd love to see that rat nose smashed, Newt snapped.
The anger in his voice startled Thomas, and he had to wonder what awful thing Newt had been through during Phase 3. Ratman rolled his eyes and sighed.
First of all, each of you has been warned of the consequences should you try to harm me. And rest assured, you're all still being watched. Second, I'm sorry for those you've lost, but in the end, it'll have been worth it. What concerns me, though, is that it seems that nothing I say is going to wake you people up to the stakes here. We're talking about the survival of the human race.
Min-ho sucked in a breath as if to begin a rant, but he stopped short, closed his mouth. Thomas knew that no matter how sincere Ratman sounded, it had to be a trick. Everything was a trick. Yet nothing good could come of their fighting him at this point, with words or with fists. The thing they needed most for the time being was patience.
"Let's all just slim it," Thomas spoke evenly. "Let's hear him out."
Frypan spoke up just as Ratman was about to continue.
"Why should we trust you people to, what was it called, the swipe? After everything you've done to us, to our friends, you want to remove the swipe? I don't think so. I'd rather stay stupid about my past, thank you very kindly."
"Wicked is good,"
Teresa said out of the blue, as if talking to herself.
"What?"
Frypan asked. Everyone turned to look at her.
"Wicked is good,"
she repeated, much louder, turning in her seat to meet the others' gazes.
"Of all the things I could have written on my arm when I first woke up from my coma, I chose those three words. I keep thinking about it, and there has to be a reason for that. I say we just shut up and do what the man says. We can only understand this with our memories back."
"I agree,"
Eris shouted, much louder than seemed necessary. Thomas was quiet as the room broke into arguments, mostly between the gladers, who sided with Frypan, and the members of Group B, who sided with Teresa. There couldn't possibly be a worse time for a battle of wills.
"Silence!"
Ratman roared, pounding his fist on the lectern. He waited for everyone to quiet down before he continued.
"Look, no one's going to blame you for the mistrust you feel. You've been pushed to your physical limits, watched people die, experienced terror in its purest form, but I promise you, when all is said and done, none of you will look back."
"What if we don't want to?" Frypan called out. "What if we don't want our memories back?"
Thomas turned to look at his friend, relieved. It was exactly what he'd been thinking himself. Ratman sighed.
"Is it because you really have no interest in remembering, or is it because you don't trust us?"
"Oh, I can't imagine why we wouldn't trust you," Frypan replied.
"Don't you realize by now that if we wanted to do something to harm you, we'd just do it?"
The man looked down at the lectern, then back up again.
"If you don't want to remove the swipe, don't do it. You can stand by and watch the others."
A choice or a bluff? Thomas couldn't tell by the man's tone, but nonetheless was surprised by his response. Again the room was silent, and before anyone else could speak, Ratman had stepped away off the stage and was walking toward the door at the back of the room. When he reached it, he turned to face them again.
"You really want to spend the rest of your lives having no memory of your parents, your family, and friends? You really want to lose the chance to hold on to at least the few good memories you may have had before all this began? Fine with me. But you might never have this opportunity again."
Thomas considered his decision. It was true that he longed to remember his family. He'd thought about it so many times. But he did know Wicked, and he wasn't going to let himself fall into another trap. He'd fight to the death before letting those people tinker with his brain again. How could he believe any memory they replaced anyway? And there was something else bothering him. The flash he'd felt when the Ratman had first announced that Wicked would remove the swipe. Besides knowing that he couldn't just accept anything Wicked called his memories, he was scared. If everything they'd been insisting was true was in fact true, he didn't want to face his past even if he could. He didn't understand the person they said he was before. And more, he didn't like him. He watched as the Ratman opened the door and left the room. As soon as he was gone, Thomas leaned in close to Minho and Newt, so only his friends could hear him.
"There's no way we do this. No way."
Minho squeezed Thomas's shoulder.
"Amen. Even if I did trust those shanks, why would I want to remember? Look what it did to Ben and Albie."
Newt nodded.
"We need to make a bloody move soon. And when we do, I'm going to knock a few heads to make myself feel better."
Thomas agreed, but knew they had to be careful.
"Not too soon, though," he said.
We can't screw this up. We need to look for our best chance.
It had been so long since Thomas had felt it, he was surprised when a sense of strength began to trickle through him. He was reunited with his friends, and this was the end of the trials, for good. One way or another, they were done doing what Wicked wanted. They stood up and, as a group, made their way to the door. But as Thomas put his hand on the knob to pull it open, he stopped. What he was hearing made his heart sink. The rest of the group was still talking, and most of the others had decided to get their memories back. Ratman was waiting outside the auditorium. He led them down several turns of the windowless hallway until they finally reached a large steel door. It was heavily bolted and looked to be sealed against outside air. Their white-clad leader placed a key card next to a square recess in the steel, and after a few clicks, the large slab of metal slid open with a grinding sound that reminded Thomas of the doors in the glade. Then there was another door. Once the group had filed into a small vestibule, the Ratman closed the first door and, with the same card, unlocked the second. On the other side was a big room that looked like nothing special, same tile floors and beige walls as the hallway. Lots of cabinets and counters. And several beds lined the back wall, each with a menacing, foreign-looking contraption of shiny metal and plastic tubes in the shape of a mask hanging over it. Thomas couldn't imagine letting someone place that thing on his face. Ratman gestured toward the beds.
"This is how we're going to remove the swipe from your brains," Ratman announced. "Don't worry, I know these devices look frightening, but the procedure won't hurt nearly as much as you might think."
"Nearly as much?" Frypan repeated. "I don't like the sound of that. So it does hurt, is what you're really saying."
"Of course, you'll experience minor discomfort. It is a surgery," Ratman said as he walked over to a large machine to the left of the beds. It had dozens of blinking lights and buttons and screens. "We'll be removing a small device from the part of your brain devoted to long-term memory. But it's not as bad as it might sound, I promise."
He started pressing buttons, and a buzzing hum filled the room.
"Wait a second," Teresa said. "Is this going to take away whatever's in there that lets you control us, too?"
The image of Teresa inside that shed in the Scorch came to Thomas, and of Albie writhing in bed back at the homestead, of Gally killing Chuck. They were all under Wicked's control. For the slightest moment, Thomas doubted his decision. Could he really allow himself to remain at their mercy? Should he just let them do the operation? But then the doubt vanished. This was about mistrust. He refused to give in. Teresa continued.
"And what about—"
She faltered, looked at Thomas. He knew what she was thinking. Their ability to talk telepathically. Not to mention what came with it. That odd sense of each other when things were working, almost as if they were sharing brains somehow. Thomas suddenly loved the idea of losing that forever. Maybe the emptiness of having Teresa not there would disappear too. Teresa recovered and continued.
"Is everything going to be out of there? Everything?"
Ratman nodded.
"Everything except the tiny device that allows us to map your kill zone patterns. And you don't have to say what you're thinking because I can see it in your eyes. No, you and Thomas and Aris won't be able to do your little trick anymore. We did turn it off temporarily, but now it'll be gone forever. However, you'll have your long-term memory restored, and we won't be able to manipulate your minds. It's a package deal, I'm afraid. Take it or leave it."
The others in the room shuffled out, whispered questions to each other. A million things had to be flying through everyone's heads. There was so much to think about. There were so many implications, so many reasons to be angry at Wicked. But the fight seemed to have drained from the group, replaced by an eagerness to get it all over with.
"That's a no-brainer," Frypan said. "Get it? No-brainer?"
The only response he got was a groan or two.
"Okay, I think we're just about ready," Ratman announced. "One last thing, though. Something I need to tell you before you regain your memories. It'll be better to hear it from me than to remember the testing."
"What are you talking about?" Harriet asked.
Ratman clasped his hands behind his back, his expression suddenly grave.
Some of you are immune to the flare, but some of you aren't. I'm going to go through the list. Please do your best to take it calmly.
Chapter 6. The room lapsed into silence, broken only by the hum of machinery and a very faint beeping sound. Thomas knew he was immune, at least he'd been told he was, but he didn't know about anyone else, had actually forgotten about it. The sickening fear he'd felt when he'd first found out came flooding back.
For an experiment to provide accurate results, the Ratman explained, one needs a control group. We did our best to keep the virus from you as long as we could, but it's airborne and highly contagious.
He paused, taking in everyone's gazes.
Just bloody get on with it, Newt said. We all figured we had the Buggin disease anyway. You're not breaking our hearts.
Yeah, Sonia added. Cut the drama and tell us already.
Thomas noticed Teresa fidgeting next to him. Had she already been told something also? He figured that she had to be immune like him, that Wicked wouldn't have chosen them for their special roles otherwise. Ratman cleared his throat.
Okay, then. Most of you are immune and have helped us gather invaluable data. Only two of you are considered candidates now, but we'll go into that later. Let's get to the list. The following people are not immune. Newt.
Something like a jolt hit Thomas in the chest. He doubled over and stared at the floor. Ratman called out a few more names, but none Thomas knew. He barely heard them over the dizzying buzz that seemed to fill his ears and fog his mind. He was surprised at his own reaction, hadn't realized just how much Newt meant to him until he heard the declaration. A thought occurred to him. Earlier, the Ratman had said that the control subjects were like the glue that kept the project's data together, made it all coherent and relevant. The glue. That was the title given to Newt. The tattoo that was etched in his skin even now, like a black scar.
Tommy, slim yourself.
Thomas looked up to see Newt standing there with his arms folded and a forced grin on his face. Thomas straightened back up.
Slim myself? That old shank just said you're not immune to the flare. How can you? I'm not worried about the bloody flare, man. I never thought I'd still be alive at this buggin' point. And living hasn't exactly been so great anyway.
Thomas couldn't tell if his friend was serious or just trying to seem tough. But the creepy grin still hadn't left Newt's face, so Thomas forced a smile onto his own.
If you're cool with slowly going crazy and wanting to eat small children, then I guess we won't cry for you.
Words had never felt so empty before.
Good that, Newt responded.
The smile disappeared, though. Thomas finally turned his attention to the rest of the people in the room, his head still dizzy with thoughts. One of the gladers, a kid named Jackson, who he'd never gotten to know very well, was staring into space with blank eyes, and another was trying to hide his tears. One of the girls of Group B had red, puffy eyes. A couple of her friends were huddled around her, trying to console her.
I wanted to get that out of the way, Ratman said. Mainly so I could tell you myself and remind you that the whole point of this operation has been to build toward a cure. Most of you not immune are in the early stages of the flare, and I have every confidence that you'll be taken care of before it goes too far. But the trials required your participation.
And what if you don't figure things out? Minho asked.
Ratman ignored him. He walked over to the closest bed, then reached up and put a hand on the odd metallic device hanging from the ceiling.
This is something we're very proud of here. A feat of scientific and medical engineering. It's called a retractor. And it will be performing this procedure. It'll be placed on your face, and I promise you'll still look just as pretty when everything is done. Small wires within the device will descend and enter your ear canals. From there, they will remove the machinery in your brain. Our doctors and nurses will give you a sedative to calm your nerves and something to dull the discomfort.
He paused to glance around the room.
You will fall into a trance-like state as the nerves repair themselves and your memories return, similar to what some of you went through during what you called the changing back in the maze. But not nearly as bad, I promise. Much of that was for the purpose of stimulating brain patterns. We have several more rooms like this one and a whole team of doctors waiting to get started. Now, I'm sure you have a million questions, but most of them will be answered by your own memories. So I'm going to wait until after the procedure for any more Q&A.
The rat man paused, then finished. Give me just a few moments to make sure the medical teams are ready. You can take this time to make your decisions. He crossed the room, the swish-swishing of his white pants the only sound cutting the silence, and disappeared through the first steel door, closing it behind him. Then the room erupted with noise as everyone started talking at once. Teresa came over to Thomas, and Minho was right behind her. He leaned in close to be heard over the buzz of frantic conversations.
You Shanks know more and remember more than anybody else. Teresa, I've never made a secret of it. I don't like you, but I want to hear what you think anyway.
Thomas was just as curious to hear Teresa's opinion. He nodded at his former friend and waited for her to speak. There was still a small part of him that foolishly expected her to finally speak out against doing what Wicked wanted.
We should do it, Teresa said, and it didn't surprise Thomas at all. The hope inside him died for good.
It feels like the right thing to me. We need our memories back so we can be smart about things, decide what to do next.
Thomas's mind was spinning, trying to put it all together.
Teresa, I know you're not stupid, but I also know you're in love with Wicked. I'm not sure what you're up to, but I'm not buying it.
Me neither, Minho said. They can manipulate us, play with our shuck brains, dude. How would we even know if they're giving us back our own memories or shoving new ones inside us?
Teresa let out a sigh.
You guys are missing the whole point. If they can control us, if they can do whatever they want with us, make us do anything, then why would they even bother with this whole charade of giving us a choice? Plus, he said they'd also be taking out the part that lets them control us. It feels legit to me.
Well, I never trusted you anyway,
Minho said, shaking his head slowly.
And certainly not them. I'm with Thomas.
What about Eris?
Newt had been so quiet, Thomas hadn't even noticed that he'd walked up behind him with Frypan.
Didn't you say he was with you guys before you came to the maze? What does he think?
Thomas scanned the room until he found Eris talking to some of his friends from Group B. He'd been hanging out with them since Thomas had arrived, which Thomas figured made sense. Eris had gone through his own maze experience with that group. But Thomas could never forgive the boy for the part he'd played in helping Teresa back in the Scorch, luring him to the chamber in the mountains and forcing him inside.
I'll go ask him, Teresa said.
Thomas and his friends watched as she walked over, and she and her group started whispering furiously to each other.
I hate that chick, Minho finally said. Come on, she's not so bad,
Frypan offered. Minho rolled his eyes.
If she's doing it, I'm not.
Me neither,
Newt agreed.
And I'm the one who supposedly has the bloody flare, so I have more stake in it than anybody. But I'm not falling for one more trick.
Thomas had already settled on that.
Let's just hear what she says. Here she comes.
Her talk with Eris had been short.
He sounded even more sure than us. They're all for it.
Well, that settles it for me,
Minho answered.
If Eris and Teresa are for it, I'm against it.
Thomas couldn't have said it better himself. Every instinct he had told him Minho was right, but he didn't voice his opinion aloud. He watched Teresa's face instead. She turned and looked at Thomas. It was a look he knew so well. She expected him to side with her. But the difference was that now he was suspicious about why she wanted it so badly. He stared at her, forcing his own expression to remain blank, and Teresa's face fell.
Suit yourselves.
She shook her head, then turned and walked away. Despite everything that had happened, Thomas's heart lurched in his chest as she retreated across the room.
Ah, man.
Frypan's voice cut in, jarring Thomas back.
We can't let them put those things on our face, can we?
I'd just be happy back in my kitchen in the homestead, I swear I would.
You forgot about the Grievers? Newt asked. Frypan paused a second, then said,
They never messed with me in the kitchen now, did they?
Yeah, well, we'll just have to find you a new place to cook. Newt grabbed Thomas and Minho by the arms and led them away from the group. I've heard enough bloody arguments. I'm not getting on one of those beds. Minho reached over and squeezed Newt's shoulder.
Me neither.
Same here, Thomas said. Then he finally voiced what had been building inside him for weeks.
We'll stick around, play along, and act nice, he whispered. But as soon as we get a chance, we're going to fight our way out of this place.
Chapter 7 Ratman returned before Newt or Minho could respond. But judging by the looks on their faces, Thomas was sure they were on board. 100%. More people were piling into the room, and Thomas turned his attention to what was going on. Everyone who'd joined them was dressed in a one-piece, somewhat loose-fitting green suit with Wicked written across the chest. It struck Thomas suddenly how thoroughly every detail of this game, this experiment, had been thought out. Could it be that the very name they'd used for their organization had been one of the variables from the beginning? A word with obvious menace, yet an entity they were told was good. It was probably just another poke to see how their brains reacted, what they felt. It was all a guessing game. Had been from the very beginning. Each doctor, Thomas assumed they were doctors, like Ratman had said, took a place next to one of the beds. They fidgeted with the masks that hung from the ceiling, adjusting the tubes, tinkering with knobs and switches Thomas couldn't see.
We've already assigned each of you a bed, Ratman said, looking down at papers on a clipboard he'd brought back with him. Those staying in this room are...
He rattled off a few names, including Sonya and Eris, but not Thomas or any of the Gladers.
If I didn't call your name, please follow me.
The whole situation had taken on a bizarre taint, too casual and run-of-the-mill for the seriousness of what was going on. Like gangsters yelling out roll call before they slaughtered a group of weeping traitors. Thomas didn't know what to do but go along until the right moment presented itself. He and the others silently followed Ratman out of the room and down another long, windowless hallway before stopping at another door. Their guide read from his list again, and Frypan and Newt were included this time.
I'm not doing it, Newt announced. You said we could choose, and that's my bloody decision.
He exchanged an angry look with Thomas that seemed to say they better do something soon or he'd go crazy.
That's fine, Ratman replied. You'll change your mind soon enough. Stay with me until we finish distributing everyone else.
What about you, Frypan? Thomas asked, trying to hide his surprise at how easily the Ratman had relented with Newt. The cook suddenly looked sheepish.
I think I'm going to let them do it.
Thomas was shocked. Are you crazy? Minho asked. Frypan shook his head, bearing himself up a little defensively.
I want to remember. Make your own choice. Let me make mine.
Let's move along, Ratman said.
Frypan disappeared into the room, hurrying, probably to avoid any more arguments. Thomas knew he had to let it go. For now, he could only worry about himself and finding a way out. Hopefully, he could rescue everyone else once he did. Ratman didn't call for Minho, Teresa, and Thomas until they were standing at the final door, along with Harriet and two other girls from Group B. So far, Newt had been the only one to say no to the procedure.
No thanks, Minho said when Ratman gestured for everyone to enter the room.
But I appreciate the invitation. You guys have a good time in there.
He gave a mock wave.
I'm not doing it either, Thomas announced.
He was beginning to feel the rush of anticipation. They had to take a chance soon, try something. Ratman stared at Thomas for a long time, his face unreadable.
You okay there,